Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. We're fortunate to have one of the, if not the best, science museum in the nation, right here in Columbus, the Center for Science and Industry, better known as COSI. And we are doubly fortunate that it's led by Dr. Frederick Bertley, affectionately known as Dr. B. Recognized as a strategist, civic leader, scientist, and educator, he wears many hats in his role as president and CEO of COSI. Recently, he added another role to his long list of accomplishments. He is now the CEO of the National Veterans Memorial and Museum after serving as its interim CEO. And joining us this hour to talk about that new role in Columbus, we have Dr. B. Welcome to All Sides, Dr. Bertley.
Amy, so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So congratulations on being named the CEO of the National Veterans Memorial Museum. You already have enough on your plate. How do you have room for this job?
You know, well, first of all, thanks for calling that out. It's one of these things where when you get to adopt a community, if the community adopts you, there's a lot of opportunities. I've had the pleasure of moving here 8.5 years ago to head up COSI. And with the great team at COSI and the great community, we were able to do some really neat things. And fast forward, I was on the board of the National Veterans Memorial Museum. And as they were transitioning from their leadership, I was asked to consider leading it. And after some long conversations, I said, sure. But really, for me, I wouldn't be able to do this if this great community wasn't supporting these kinds of institutions. Because you're right, it is two CEO positions. It's a lot of work. But I got a great team at both institutions, and I'm happy to be part of the leadership.
Now, you don't have, like, you have a lot of titles. I listed a lot of titles, but none of those is military experience that I'm aware of. So how did you end up as the permanent CEO of a Veterans Memorial Museum without the military part?
Yeah, so it's a great question. First of all, I did not serve in the military. My father served in the Navy, but he served in the Navy of the country north of us. So he served in the Canadian Navy. So as such,
fascinating.
I have a respect and appreciation for that. But fast forward, it's important to understand that the National Veterans Memorial and Museum is essentially a museum. Mm. It's a cultural institution. And so regardless of what the topic is, you need or you would want leadership that understands the nuances of how to run a cultural institution. And so the military component, in our case, the veteran component, we really like to draw that line, because a lot of people kind of mix them and say, oh, it's a military museum. No, this is about the veterans. You've taken off the cloth, you've served the country, and now we want to celebrate and recognize who you are as people and how you continue to contribute to this great nation. And so that's supportive. We have a great president. His name is Colonel Bill Butler, served for 28 years in the Army, 3 tours overseas. You know, so he's got that veteran face, if you will. But the institution needs, you know, people just have experience running cultural institutions. And so that's why, you know, having an experience of 20 plus years running cultural institutions, it makes sense that someone with my background might be an interesting pick to go from temporary to permanent.
Okay. So you're the CEO and you have a president, instead of having that combo title that people sometimes have, a president and CEO. So you have the museum part, and then the other guy has the president name and he has the military part.
That's correct. Across the street, I have both titles.
Yeah.
President and CEO at COSI, but just quote unquote, just CEO at NVMM.
Okay. So you were on the board of the directors of the museum, as you mentioned. How long did you serve on the board before you got that interim job?
About 5 years.
Five years? Okay.
So we opened in 2018 and I was on the board from 2019.
And your predecessor was there since the museum opened.
Yes, he was the founding president and CEO.
CEO. Yeah. Right, and he had the military experience.
That's right. He's a great general. He served this country for over 3 decades, and you know, he did a fabulous job.
Was he missing the museum part then? The how to run a museum?
Well, I don't want to say he was missing the museum part. I'm just saying as they transitioned out, they were looking for the next leader, and so they looked for someone who had a little more museum experience.
Okay. So did you go through an interview process? Because I read that they were going to do a nationwide search for a new CEO, but you were right here. Did they vet you?
They did do a search. So they had a search, and it was nationwide, and they went through a lot of candidates. But once you opened in 2018 and had about 6 years of a running life, they kind of had a sense of, okay, we probably need a different kind of leader. And so as the search was happening, they were looking for kind of traditionally military service folks, et cetera. And they came to a point where they said, well, you know what, maybe we can find somebody who has a slightly different angle, slightly different bent to continue the next iteration of the museum. And that's where they asked me to come in as an interim. And so I did that. And then they were like, listen, basically, you know, we enjoy what you're doing. You know, you're working well with the team. Would you consider this being, you know, the CEO? And I said, absolutely happy to do that for some time.
Running one museum, I would think, is a big job. So how are you adjusting to running two?
It's so interesting. So yes, there are still 24 hours. Science or not, I haven't been, no, I haven't, along with others, have not figured out how to add more hours to the day. But I wouldn't be able to do this if this was my first year at COSI or even my second year at COSI. But having been here for 8 years, connecting with the COSI team, building a team there, and then connecting with the community and understanding a lot of how things operate, that allowed me some cushion to take on more support, and in this case, support the institution across the street. But the other important thing, and I hope we can talk about it a little bit later, is the secret sauce that helped make COSI successful is partnerships. Our mission across the street is to engage, inspire, and transform lives and communities by being the best partner in science, technology, and industry. And that partnership is literally our secret sauce. So now, when I came to look at the possibility of overseeing NVMM, there were a lot of strategic concepts and practices that I really had well-versed, you know, lots of arrows in my quiver, so to speak, that I was ready to share that with the great team that's there and continue to build our team. So it's, you know, if I applied for COSI back in 2017 and they said, oh, would you do COSI and this other institution? There's no way. Mm-hmm. But having had some tenure here and some experience and building the great relationships that this community supports. And I want to say, this community does support its civic and cultural institutions, which is nice.
So you called it NVMM. Is that because COSI is easier to say than saying the whole name. So are we going with NVMM?
I like four letters, COSI, yeah. NVMM. But it is the National Veterans Memorial Museum. And it's important for our community here to understand that this is not a spray painted tag on the building. This is one of John Glenn's last great initiatives. He used to live in Maranova, which would overlook, Maranova is a big building downtown, mm-hmm. would overlook the old vets. And he said, you know, I want to make sure there's a beacon, an institution that really recognize veteran services for all branches in this country. And it should be in D.C. where all the other national institutions are, but it's not. And it was an act of Congress and signed in by the President of the United States to make that institution that's right here in Columbus. So it's a big deal that we have the National Veterans Memorial Museum here. That's a long mouthful, so that's why sometimes we shorten it with NVMM.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, why Columbus? Why here? Is John Glenn really the reason, or is there
100%,
more to it than that?
100%. There was a team of folks who are kind of like the overall founders of this concept, but John Glenn led it, as you know. I mean, he was, and you talk about service. I mean, John Glenn, an amazing person, served in the military, came out of that. Just became this astronaut that was the first human to, or the first American to circumvent the planet safely.
Yeah.
On the backs, by the way, of none other than Katherine Johnson, African-American woman doing the math calculation from, remember that movie Hidden Figures?
Oh, of course. Great
John
movie.
Glenn picked her to do the math to make him return safely.
I think I heard that.
So he did that. And then, of course, he continued his service by being one of the best senators in this country. Just an amazing individual. But he's from Ohio. He's from New Concord. And he loves the state of Ohio. And he said, this needs to be here. And there's so many great military connections and veteran connections in the state of Ohio. So, yeah. So because he had enough gravitas, you know, and by the way, some folks were like, wait a minute, why is this not in D.C. as they were trying to get this act approved? And then some other states stepped in. Well, why is it in Ohio? Why is it not in Texas? Why is it? But he had gravitas and he had a lot of support. And eventually they got bipartisan support to sign this into sign this act.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with Dr. Frederick Burtley, CEO of COSI, and we're talking about his new role as CEO of the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. Now, the National Veterans Memorial Museum is not without its problems. The museum had a $4.8 million operating deficit in 2022, $2.7 million deficit in 2023. What happened there? How did it get into so much debt?
Yeah, it's important to understand that that's deferred debt. It's a brand new building. It's a ground up construction. And so a lot of times when you have projects, you could either have all the money for the project raised up front, And you pay it, or you can float a bond to cover the construction. In this case, the building cost X, and I can't pull out the exact number that it costs to build it, envision it, and stand it up. And then some of that was deferred and pushed through years one, years two, years three, and cascading down. And so that's where a lot of that came from. Now, with that said, there's a great opportunity to significantly increase the awareness, because I've had the pleasure of being there now for a year, did an honor flight, connecting to the veteran community, and so many people in our front yard and backyards don't know about this institution. So there is some opportunity to increase revenue by increasing foot traffic and other forms of partnerships, et cetera. But that wasn't a straight mismanagement of funds or not, you know, not being able to fundraise. It was just, you know, transferring progressively some of the debt that actually allowed the building to be stood up in the first place.
No, is there still going to be debt? I mean, the 2024 990 form hasn't been published yet. Is there more debt still?
Yeah, we're consistently decreasing it. So okay. we're getting the flat line shortly.
Now, can you compare this building to the early days of COSI? Because you weren't around, but it's a large landmark architectural building. Large means expensive. I know you weren't around when COSI was built in the way that it is, but COSI struggled in the beginning with being a big building. Is that what's going on with the National Veterans Memorial Museum? Is it too big of a building?
Yeah, first of all, thank you. It's a great question, and it's funny that I'm leading both institutions that had this little kind of blip. When they made COSI, and when they created COSI in 2000, this new building on the peninsula, that was just massive compared to the old building across the original Wendy's on Broad Street. And so when they opened it, they just had a lot of space. And the CapEx expenses to maintain that kind of building were huge. And so it took a while to generate enough foot traffic to support just the cost of such a big building. In the case of the National Veterans Memorial Museum, the building is much smaller than COSI. It looks, you know, you see this beautiful structure as you drive down Broad Street, but it's much smaller. There are some different concerns at the building, and that's in that they created this absolutely award-winning architectural jewel. It's a beautiful building, but it was designed more as a beautiful building, an architectural jewel, and less as a museum. So what I mean by that is I'm talking about the operational aspects of the museum. So flow through traffic, where do you put storage space? So it's a whole different issue than COSI. It's more of, okay, we called it a museum. Now let's pivot and kind of create an infrastructure to support higher foot traffic, higher level exhibits, that'll ensure more people come into the building to learn about the stories of veterans. So it's a different story, ending up kind of almost in a similar position, but different story.
Do you need to change some of the building on the inside to make it fit exhibits better, maybe like a little less of the pretty and a little more of the functional?
Exactly right. And what we do, we create a strategic plan, which we actually worked on for about 10 months, and we're really excited about it. And we have phases. And so one of the phases is interior, small things that we can do that are relatively inexpensive to ensure accessibility. But, you know, long-term scenario, if we want to double down on the museum component where you want to attract much bigger exhibits and much more things that are very exciting to a wider audience, then yes, you'll look at some capital construction needs, etc. But that's down the line. Right now, we're so excited about bringing new life, new kind of partnership visions to ensure that people know about this great place.
Now, you said that the debt was planned debt because of the building, but are you have, I mean, obviously you don't want to be in debt. So what are you working on to try to get more money? Did you reduce hours or reduce staff to try to stabilize the budget?
Sure. So before I came on board, there was an unfortunate but necessary transition in staff. So it went from a staff of about 41 down to about 20. So and in most museums, the biggest delta in your expenses is usually human capital. So staff. So that happened before I came in as CEO. But since then, we've been very creative around the partnership side, and we've been very creative around who specifically we partner with, because depending how you partner and depending how you structure programs, you can get serious funding, city funding, county funding, state funding, and then corporate funding, right? And so when you look at the philanthropic circle, which an institution like NVMM is mostly supported through philanthropic endeavors, you know, a lot of people go around and ask for a check. That's great. But, you know, we like to have what we call skin in the game. If I'm asking an individual donor or a company for some support, I don't just want to put my hand out or my hat on and say, hey, we're a culture institution, please support us. I want to show them where their dollar will make a difference. And so there are all kinds of ways of doing that. And one of the biggest ways of doing that is taking our institution called NVMM and getting a really clear vision and mission statement that allows us to open the aperture of interest for people, right? Because a lot of people be like, well, I'm not a veteran, or I didn't serve, or my parents didn't serve, why am I going to go there? So the mission of the institution now is to honor all veterans. So it begins with veterans. Honor all veterans, to elevate their stories, and then three, amplify the power of service everywhere for everyone. So now if you're a K-12 teacher, and you want to teach your students about service and why that's important, now NVMM becomes a place that I should really think about going. But if you're thinking about NVMM as just a veterans place only, although we begin with veterans and we honor veterans, and that is the first and quintessential point of the institution, but a teacher or Joe and Jane Public might be like, well, it's not for me. I didn't, you know, I'm not a veteran. But if you understand that we can study what veterans have done as the penultimate example of service, then that can transfer in so many ways. And John Glenn's the best example of that. He served in the military, but you can serve in the public service. You can serve in your church, in your synagogue, in your community center. You can serve in your food pantry. And so now we've gone from being an institution that's, you know, just kind of myopically looking at veterans only, to looking at leveraging the great things that veterans have done to broaden our understanding of why service is so important for this great nation. And that is fundable, because now you can partner with institutions that get it. People want to donate to support that, and that's something that allows us to bring in more revenue.
We'll get more into that service component, definitely. But when you were listing off the places to get money from, you didn't mention national funding. Do you get federal money?
Well, so that's great. So no, to make it clear, we have that national designation. We get airballs and oxygen squares from the federal government at this point. And all jokes aside, that was part of the kind of push and pull to get the national designation, because when John Glenn and folks were pushing this forward, some of the pushback was, well, does that mean the feds have to fund it? Is there going to have to be a line item in the federal government, kind of like the Smithsonian? And so at the time, folks were like, no, we just want that designation. However, one of our strategies with our new strategic plan is absolutely, how can we, as the National Veterans Memorial Museum that serves all branches of the military in all 50 states, the only institution of its kind, how do we have an impact in the 49 other states? And if we can show some type of impact through our story corps, recording veteran stories that are actually now in the Library of Congress, believe it or not, we record them, right, and going through all that, if we can show an impact or an interest to 49 other states, then there's a reason for why we can start looking for federal funding to support that. And we also met with Secretary Collins, who is the head of the VA. The VA is the second largest budget in the United States of America. And he came, he had a wonderful visit at the National Veterans Memorial Museum. And we're working with him to see if we can, we're actually about to enter a memorandum of understanding, but to see if we can be a kind of access point / conduit for a lot of their ideas and be a mouthpiece, if you will, for the VA. And with that, then maybe we can get some federal funding support that becomes a line item annually in our budget.
Our guest this hour is Dr. Frederick Bertley, CEO of COSI, and more recently, the CEO of the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. B, and we're going to talk more about those future plans and that five-year plan for the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The vision and mission statement for COSI is to engage, inform, inspire, and transform. Those words apply to our guest this hour, Dr. Frederick Bertley, CEO of COSI. And he's recently been named the CEO of the National Veterans Memorial and Museum after serving as its interim CEO. We're talking today about the vision for the National Veterans Memorial Museum going forward, and later we'll talk more about COSI, too. Dr. B, thanks for being here today.
Always a pleasure, Amy.
So I wanted to back up for a second and talk more about that the veterans component. The museum offers free admission to veterans, which is great for the nonprofit mission, makes sense, but it's probably not the most financially beneficial thing, right? The key demographic coming to your museum, veterans, get in for free. Do you need to charge more for visits?
Oh, no, not at all. We have to remember that this country, less than 1% actually serve in the military. So the veteran population isn't massive. And we want all of them to, of course, come to the museum and come and be, you know, be honored in that way. But what's more important is those that didn't wear the cloth metaphorically and serve in the military, that they understand who veterans are. So we actually want all this other much wider audience, the 99.5% of the rest of the population, to think that this is an important, or not think, to understand that this is an important institution to attend to. So it's great for it has to be and should be free for veterans. But if you're a non-veteran, we want you in the building. Mm-hmm. And so how do we tweak and reshine, if you will, our building to attract the wider audience that aren't veterans and make them understand that, hey, this building is for you too.
Are you going to keep admission where it is for now at the price it is?
Yeah, for now. I mean, whether there's an inflation bump or not, I don't know. But we haven't done a pricing study yet to specifically address your question.
Now, the Veterans Memorial and Museum celebrates the stories of veterans, their experience. You went through that mission and then you talked about, you know, adding in the service component as well. But we're not displaying big tanks and big airplanes, right? Yep. So that's not what the museum is about. Like, would the big tanks and the big airplanes draw in more people?
I'm really glad you asked that. And, you know, I'll just give a plug to the World War II Museum in New Orleans. I mean, a phenomenal museum, right? And the Air Force has their museum. The Army has a museum.
Yeah, I was thinking with the Air Force Museum.
There you
go. Yeah,
absolutely. And these are all great institutions. That's great. But that's not what this institution is. Mm-hmm. That was not the vision of Glenn and John Glenn and other folks. The vision here is to not make it a military museum that looks at military technology or looks at tanks and planes, which are all cool things, especially the scientists. I love engineering. It is really about the humanity of the people who serve this country and especially their lives after they exit active duty. So when you become a veteran, I mean, there's so many stereotypes of veterans. When you think of a stereotype of veteran, it's an old person, usually has issues, mental health issues, which are real, but guess what? The percentage of mental health issues on non-veteran population is actually higher than the veteran population, believe it or not, right? So there's all these weird kind of misunderstood constructs of who the veteran is, yet they've contributed in immeasurable ways for this great country. And that's what the DNA of the NVMM, the National Veterans Memorial Museum, is about. As you said, it's to tell their stories and share their stories and learn from their stories.
Okay. So no big tanks. We're going to do the stories.
Now, with that said, as a CEO, if I had a big tank that was going to bring in a bajillion dollars into the institution, I will absolutely be open to that. But we'd find a way to do it intelligently so that it is in recognition of veterans.
Right. All right. So earlier we mentioned that you came up with a five-year plan. It's a six-point five-year plan. And one of those points is partnerships. And you've mentioned that a couple of times already, how strategic partnerships are so important for a museum to function and succeed. What ways are COSI and the National Veterans Memorial Museum collaborating?
Oh, there's so many. So first of all, I do want to recognize the Columbus Partnership, because the Columbus Partnership, for your listeners who aren't super familiar with it, is the organization of basically all the business CEOs that get together to think about and address concerns of Central Ohio. And one of the things that they've been talking about in the last couple of years is, you know, because they're probably the highest funders of civic institutions, right? All these companies, they donate generously. And so one of the things they're looking at is, well, how do we, you know, we don't want to write 20 different checks to 20 different institutions. Mm-hmm. How do we think about reconstructing this model? And one of the things they understand, which is something that independently COSI has understood, is partnerships is a way to maximize the dollar that comes in, to maximize the impact you can have, and have a much broader exposure. And so in the case of COSI and MVMM, everything from working together collaboratively for Navy Week. So COSI hosted Navy Week, which were 7 days. A whole bunch of officers were here, along with admirals from the Navy.
I interviewed an admiral, I remember.
There you go. That's right. And I'm sure you enjoyed it. And the purpose of that is to showcase what the Navy is for every given city. They go to different cities around the country. So that was a collaborative effort. Another collaborative effort was the John Glenn Inspiration Kit. So as you know, COSI has these great kits. They're called the Learning Lunch Boxes. It's about a shoebox size kit that has hands-on activities to get kids excited about science. And we have about 15 different contents, including the America 250 kit, where the federal government subsidized COSI to create a kit that celebrates 250 years as we celebrate our semi-quincentennial, 250 years of great innovation. Mm-hmm. So a kiddo can see themselves, him or her, as a inventor or contributor through that kit. Well, the next kit after that was the John Glenn Inspiration Kit. This is recognizing John Glenn's work as an astronaut, so there's some good space stuff there. Obviously, military services, some good science and engineering content there. But the third piece is service. He and Annie Glenn were committed to service. So that little hands-on kit was something we did in partnership with NVMM, as well as a Navy kit that was funded by the U.S. Navy that recognizes all the STEM and engineering disciplines of the Navy. Inside that box was done in partnership with NVMM. So that's just two examples right off the bat where COSI just walked across the street, embraced our folks on the other side of Broad Street.
I want a John Glenn kit. I miss the John Glenn kit.
Done and done. It is on your way.
I'm an alum of the John Glenn College of Public Affairs.
Oh,
so
right.
I was
okay,
like,
great.
Yeah, so I was like, where's my John Glenn kit?
Oh, okay. Done. Sorry, real quick. And we did work with Dean Brown and the John Glenn College, actually, to create that kit.
Okay.
So, again, the point of partnerships.
All right. So that's the partnership with COSI. Mm. And obviously, you're across the street from each other. You're in charge of both. So that partnership will be easier, I guess. You could say more, you know, it'll happen because you want it to, right? What other partnerships are you looking at?
Sure. So with COSI, we also look at shared services, right? Like, why do we have two cleaning teams? Why do we have two security teams? Why? Because, again, to your point, the proximity allows us to think smartly around expenses and how can we be more creative there. But then there's also the ticketing, right? And so you talked about tickets early. So we have a partnership where if you go to COSI, you can get access to NVMM or vice versa at a discounted rate. So almost like two institutions for one, but that's not exactly what it is. And you can just go to our website and see how that works. But yes, and so that's the COSI piece. But then we have other partnerships. I'm really excited about a partnership we're going to mention next Wednesday. It's with CMC, the Columbus Metropolitan Club. As you know, they do these fantastic weekly conversations. And so we're going to launch and announce a big partnership literally in a week.
Is it a secret partnership?
It's a partnership with them. It's not super secret, but we're really excited to
announce it. It's the worst kept secret in Columbus.
It's the worst kept secret. The mayor will be there and some other officials to talk about it. But we also have a partnership, and this is getting back to a funder, and this is a shout out to Nationwide. We have a partnership with the library. As you know, Columbus CML has got this phenomenal library system called the Columbus Metropolitan Library. And so we created something called, in partnership with CML, supported by first person to group to step up was Nationwide, that works with NVMM, so National Veterans Memorial Museum, Columbus Metropolitan Library, and a little bit of COSI to create what are called service nooks. And so the library is interested in literacy and promoting reading and other things, you know, studies. NVMM is all about service and veteran service, and then COSI is about hands-on engaging. So these are service nooks, which are physical spaces. We're piloting two. The first one we launched a couple of weeks ago at the library, the main branch library, and the second one is going to be at a Whitehall branch. And it's a physical space that has books that are either written by veterans or about veterans. And so you can check those books out and learn about veteran service there. But then there's also stations where you can write thank you notes to veterans. You can ask veterans a question. You can have an interactive experience through this nook. And what's amazing is it connects and tells the story and shares veterans with a wider audience. So at our launch, we had about 50 students from neighboring schools and about 200 people showed up in the main library branch, and people are really excited about that. Nationwide wanted to fund that because Nationwide understands the importance of service, and so they said this really checks all of our boxes in terms of fulfilling community engagement through service, and so they stepped up to fund the program. But that's a really exciting partnership, and the goal here is we started off in two branches, then get through the other 23 remaining or 24 remaining branches in the CML system. But back to your point about national funding, almost every major city has a library system, small, medium, large. As we show this in the next 2 to 3 years of it being an effective way to connect the communities through literacy, through service, and through hands-on engagement, we hope to replicate this in other states. And back to your point, hopefully that allows us to have either federal dollars to support that expansion or local state dollars and county dollars to support it.
You mentioned the Columbus Metropolitan Club partnership. That's a secret until next week. But that leads me to say that it seems like you're also pivoting to more events. Are you trying to be an event space too? Can a museum be an event space?
I absolutely want to make this clear to your listeners. We are an amazing event space. Absolutely. I mean, it is a beautiful space. Those of you who've been there know it's actually a stunning space. And you also feel good about it just because of the auspiciousness of veterans. So yes, we also look at rentals, but not just any rental. Like, we don't want to necessarily have a rave, you know, go crazy inside. We still want to
Probably
respect
not.
The institution, but there are some really neat ways to have it be an event space and possibly a collaborative event space that can lead to downstream revenue, but also programmatic impact.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Dr. Frederick Burtley, CEO of COSI, and we're talking about his new role as CEO of the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. You told the Columbus Dispatch, and you mentioned it earlier, that you met with the U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs asking for his support. And, I mean, it would be great to attract, you know, you're talking about a lot of partnerships here in Columbus, but we need to get people from around the nation to come to this. Do vets from around the country know that this place exists in Columbus, Ohio?
Very few. But I'll say this. I mean, the poison chalice is this community doesn't really know about the National Veterans Memorial Museum. So charity begins at home. So we want to make sure through marketing, which we haven't really dug in yet, we're about to launch a massive marketing campaign to really get the word out in Central Ohio and the 87 other counties that this is here in Ohio. But also it's kind of parallel tracks. Try to think about creative ways of how to get other states and individuals to recognize us. Now, with that said, we have a membership program, and we have memberships from all 50 states, so people know of us, but they don't know of us to the extent that we want to be known as the national institution to recognize all veterans from all branches.
Do you have reciprocal memberships with other kinds of museums, too, the way COSI does?
Yes, yes, with some, especially with the military-based museums, yes. Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned that you're helping to mark America's 250th birthday. You mentioned a box. Do you have other events planned for the museum related to that?
So it's funny you brought up Secretary Collins and the VA. He's doing a road tour to celebrate 250 years of this great country. And so one of the things in the memorandum of understanding is that we're a partner with him. Not that we're going to go to every single stop, but we're going to go to several of the stops to showcase NVMM in conjunction with whatever he's doing in these different states. So that's at the national level. You know, we worked very closely with the 250th committee. Every state, by the way, I think you know this, every state has its own. So we've worked with the state of Ohio's 250 campaign to do a lot of stuff with COSI and now with NVMM. So we'll be doing some very interesting programs. I mean, and you got to think about it. The U.S. Navy, and let me get this right because I know Colonel B and some other folks are listening. The U.S. Army was the first to be in existence, 250 years old. Then the U.S. Navy, 250 years old. Sorry. The Marines, 250 years old. Then the U.S. Navy, 250 years old. So not only is the country turning 250 years old in 2026, all the military branches, or the first three military branches, also celebrated their semi-quincentennial. So there's so many really synergistic ways to think about 250 and the symbolism of that quarter millennium for this great nation and for the National Veterans Memorial Museum.
We recently did a show about challenges museums around the country are facing in light of the Trump administration and their concerns with improper ideology, their concerns with the way history is being taught, even concerns over specific museum exhibits. How cautious are you? Are you worried, especially running a National Veterans Memorial Museum? Are you cautious about what exhibits you bring in? Do you worry about the way you're teaching history?
Well, you know, I, in general, and someone who runs a cultural institution, you got to try to be apolitical, you know, because if you look at COSI or you look at MMM, COSI recognizes science and STEM engagement. That's neutral. Should be.
I was going to say, is it?
Well, the content is, you know, everything becomes politicized. That's a different story. Mm-hmm. But the content is. And similarly, on, you know, recognizing and honoring veterans is an important thing. What's important is there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. And then the other amazing quote, one of my heroes, or if that's the right word, is Neil deGrasse Tyson. He says, the cool thing about science is there a cool thing about facts is they're true, whether you believe them or not. Mm. So if we have verified historical facts, and NVMM or COSI has that in our building and it's verified, that outlasts any administration, whether it's a D or an R party, the history is still going to outlast that. So yes, we have to be very sensitive and we can't be tone deaf to shifts in political things that are happening, but we're not going to compromise the integrity of the science or the historical fact because of a political sway one way or another. It's important to stand behind it. Now, if it's wrong, if we have something that's wrong, of course, we got to fix that. The museums go through that every now and then. Oh, my gosh, they had something on, their provenance wasn't right, or they had something inaccurate. Yeah, you got to fix that. But that pressure, you know, is something we have to be eyes wide open to. But in our case, and I will say this on air, in our case, at this point, we don't get any federal funding, so we didn't, you know, that wasn't an issue.
Hmm. This hour, we are talking with Dr. Frederick Burtley, CEO of COSI and CEO of the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. Coming up, we are going to turn our conversation away from museums slightly and towards science, another passion of Dr. B. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. After serving as the interim CEO of the National Veterans Memorial Museum, our guest, Dr. Frederick Burtley, has been named CEO. This is a new title to add to a long list of ways to describe Dr. B. In addition to being an immunologist, an educator, the former host of WOSU-TV's QED with Dr. B, he's also the president and CEO of COSI, Columbus's Science Museum. We've been talking with Dr. B about his plans for the National Veterans Memorial Museum, and now, just for a few minutes, we're going to pivot to science. Thanks for being here today on All Sides, Dr. B.
Always a pleasure to be here, Amy.
So you're an immunologist, so I have to ask your thoughts on recent developments in the news out of the Trump administration, Health and Human Services Department. There's lots of talk about the safety of vaccines, who should get shots when. What have your thoughts been with all of this news recently?
Yeah, so it's important to understand, and we went through this when COVID was here and people didn't know, you know, which way to go and how to think about vaccines, et cetera, that this country has one of the highest stringent processes to get a vaccine to be actually made, right? I mean, you look at the UK and much of Europe, which have, they have great standards. We're like through the roof. So anything that is actually identified as a vaccine has gone through massive testing. And this is so important for your listeners. So you tested first in animals and mice. And I'm not getting into whether you think animal testing is good, but just to go through the process, you tested it. And first of all, you tested in glassware. Then you enter the mouse model. Then you climb up the food chain. And then you get into usually rhesus macaques that are very close to the human system. Then they do what are called clinical trials in humans. So they test them. These are all testing, testing. After all, and there's three clinical phases you have to go through. First one isn't even, does the vaccine work? The first one is it's safe. Whether the vaccine will work to stop influenza or not, they just test if it's safe. And then there's a second one and a third one to look at efficacy. After all of that data goes to an independent body. It doesn't go to the FDA. It doesn't go to government employees. It doesn't go to Pfizer or Merck or a company. It goes to a bunch of experts in the field of immunology. That's the advisory committee. They're not paid. They're not connected, and they dig through copious amounts of data and say, okay, yes, it's deemed safe, or wait a minute, you got to go back. So once a vaccine's out there, it's safe, right? And so...
But RFK Jr. changed a whole bunch of people on that panel.
Well, therein lies the problem. I mean, Amy, if your toilet's not running or you're having problems with your sink, you're going to call a plumber, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to fly, you're going to want a pilot in that seat. You wouldn't get on a plane if the person came up to you and said, well, I have an opinion on how to fly this. Mm-hmm. No, in society, we have these things called experts. And so just like your mechanic, just like your plumber, your electrician, your pilot, your cardiothoracic surgeon, these are people who spent decades or at least, you know, a lot of time learning that craft and being experts. So if someone is removing these expert pilots or plumbers or electricians and putting somebody because they have a relationship with them or they know them or they like them, that's not necessarily serving the plumbing industry, electrical industry, or the aviation industry properly. So that is a problem that now some of these folks who are on these advisory committees aren't experts, and you know, there may be a downstream effect of that.
Well, pivoting to your role, your hat you wear as a museum director, so we talked about history in museums, but there's this also a time when there's a lot of people out there questioning science, from vaccines, which are being questioned, to climate change. People are becoming more and more skeptical of science. How do you address the skepticism, especially when you're deciding what to exhibit at COSI?
I love that question. And the first thing I want to share is the biggest skeptics of science are actually scientists, right? A lot of times people think scientists are arrogant people that they think they know it all. Scientists are the biggest, most skeptical people. That's why we have something called peer-reviewed. So, Amy, you came up with this great anti-breast cancer drug and blah, blah, blah. It's going to get, your analysis is going to get ripped apart by a whole bunch of other experts who are like, well, we don't know if this is true. So scientists love skeptics. That's point number one. As a science communicator myself, point number two is absolutely anybody, if you're part of the 8 billion people on the planet, you have the right to question something, especially if you're ingesting it or drinking it or what have you, right? Or getting it shot in your arm. So there's nothing wrong with people questioning stuff. The question is, what do you do after you ask a question? All we can do is be Socratic and research and pull out as much data or information that helps address the question or concern person X or person Y has on it. And so the issue is that's not being done in a constructive way. So scientists, one, need to own it, like myself, and say, hey, don't make fun of people when they have a question about the vaccines. Don't try to embarrass them. Don't use, you know, we like to talk in these long Latin words and we think we're smarter than everybody else because we have this vocabulary. No, meet them where they are, speak in a vocabulary that they understand, engage them, get them to see that you're not going to make fun of them or dismiss their opinion, but then show them a way to look at to how do you hunt the sources of data and how do you analyze the data and let the person form their conclusion. But that's not what happens. What's been happening is it's opinion versus opinion, and then, you know, things are thrown in to muddy the conversation. So there's nothing wrong with asking questions, and there's nothing wrong with people being uncertain about something. The question is, what do you do after that? And if you still decide after all the data that the earth is flat, everybody has the right to have their opinion. It doesn't mean that everybody's right. Right? And so that's how I view that. I have no objections.
But you're not going to put an exhibit in COSI that says the earth is flat, right?
Well, no, because we're a science institution. And a science institution or science museum is basing it on scientific data. Mm-hmm. There's no scientific data that proves that the earth is flat. Mm-hmm. So why would we put that on there?
Okay. Would you bring a film that talks about global warming or climate change and show that?
Absolutely. And we'd be more than happy to have a discussion about why the earth is not flat. So mm-hmm. I want flat earthers to come to COSI and have a conversation about it. But, you know, we'll demonstrate ways, and again, in a respectable way, to get them to understand that, hey, here's how you're looking at stuff, but here are the flaws in your logic. Here's the fallacies of your data. Here's, you know, that it's like climate science, right? I mean, you'll have people who say, well, there are some scientists that don't think climate change is a thing. That's true, but that's 0.1% of scientists. Mm-hmm. So if 99.9% of the experts in the world are telling you this, and you have 0.1% of someone who's supposedly skilled in that area that tells you that, you know, where are you going to believe, right? I mean, so and that's, again, the rigor of science. And so
you strike me as a very positive person. You live your life, you know, with a smile. Is this a hard time, though, to be a museum director? You know, every day there could be a new headline saying that, you know, the Smithsonian is changing their exhibits, or the, you know, this museum has to take this out, or this museum is closing this thing. Is that hard for you?
I mean, that's a great question. And in short, it's a hard time for several reasons. It's a hard time for the reasons you're outlining, in that, you know, museums, whether it's science museums or culture or art museums or history mm-hmm. museums, are getting pressure to showcase X and not showcase Y. And, you know, that should be more democratic than it actually is. So that's a pressure. But another pressure, you talked about it earlier in the conversation, are finances. Because of the uncertainty of the government, because of a lot of the things that have happened in the last year and moving into the next few years, is foot traffic is down in museum. You all, NPR, published a really good story about 2 weeks ago on museums. Foot traffic is down, revenues are down, philanthropic support is down. And that's all connected to the tenor and tone of where the nation's going. So it's a general tough time. But, I mean, I work at the science museum now, and now at the veterans, and I talk about service for the veterans, and I talk about, you know, science in the case of COSI. But more important, cultural institutions are there because of that first word. They actually provide culture. right? Not all of us have an amazing Monet or Gauguin or Matisse or Picasso collection, but you could go to CMA or you can go to the Smithsonian, which is free, and see these things. And the point of these cultural institutions, whether science, art, or history, is that culture will elevate your humanity because you'll learn a little bit more. And if you have an elevated humanity, the concept is, well, you might give your best self back to society. So cultural institutions in general are important. And so I would just hope that we can weather this challenging period, because you don't want to see massive shutdown of cultural institutions across this country. That will not be great for society. That will not be great for humanity.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the leader of two of Columbus's cultural institutions, Dr. Frederick Bertley, who is leading he's the CEO of COSI and now the CEO of the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. Let's spend the last few minutes of the hour talking about getting that foot traffic in there. What is coming up at the National Veterans Memorial and Museum that you wanted to highlight so that people are sure to get their tickets and pay attention?
Absolutely. So first of all, if you haven't been there, please come through. It's an incredible experience. That's one. Two, if you want to do an event, feel free to plan your event there. But we celebrate a lot of the seminal things like Memorial Day, National Vietnam Veterans Day, etc. But one thing that I'm really excited about amongst the many cool things we're doing is in February and March, we will be hosting Will Haygood. Will Haygood is the author of The Butler, one of the most successful books and one of the most successful Hollywood films of the last two, three decades. And he's actually Columbus native, which is really exciting. And Amy, if you can imagine this, with all the movies and things we have on Vietnam, and I'll give a plug to our Matthew Modine exhibit in a minute, but with all of the great movies and things we have in Vietnam, there is not a definitive nonfiction text about the African-American experience in Vietnam. So Will Haygood...
Until now.
So Will Haygood wrote this book, which we will be showcasing it in February. It's going to be released around that time. And it is called The War Within the War, The Black Struggle in Vietnam, in Vietnam and at Home. And while it is an African-American story, it more... broadly speaking, it's actually an American story. So it's got crossover appeal to everybody. But we'll have that in February, on February 28th at NVMM, and then back for in March during our recognition of the Vietnam War Veteran Day on March 28th. So just remember February 28th and March 28th at NVMM.
Show up on a 28th.
Show up on the 28th. You can get a signed copy. It's going to be amazing. We're doing a lot of different activities around that. But also what we have right now, and I'm so excited to say that we had the pleasure of hosting Matthew Modine himself. If you remember, he's the main character of Full Metal Jacket, and the exhibition is actually Full Metal Jacket on exhibit at NVMM now. He came up a few weeks ago. He was our speaker at one of our big days. Just an amazing individual. The exhibition is about his photography. He is the only person that Stanley Kubrick, the famous director and filmmaker, allowed to take pictures in any of his personal exposés. And so these are incredible photos of the whole process of filming Full Metal Jacket. It's a fantastic exhibit, and it's there at NVMM right now, so definitely check it out.
Did he make the exhibit for your museum?
No, he made the exhibit. He had these beautiful images and film for decades, because remember all of the movies, and he just created the exhibit, but of course he knew who we were, and he's like, yes, we got to have this in your space.
And the permanent collection at the National Veterans Memorial and Museum, tell people about that briefly.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a permanent collection there, especially mainly on the first floor, and it's really good because it tracks the veteran experience. Now, one of the things to our listeners, to our team, we always look to, well, how can we improve these exhibits? So we're going to go through, that's part of our strategic plan. We're going to look at that and think about over the next kind of 12 months, 24 months, how we refresh that and add and tweak based on what we know more of, and also based on some feedback. But it's an incredible exhibit that showcases not military service per se, but the veteran experience. So what you went through the military and then how that transitions you into a veteran. And then in the Great Hall, which is in that main beautiful space, we have this incredible exhibition that features these photographs of veterans when they were in military outfit, when they were serving, and then 10, 20, 30, 40, sometimes 50 years later, and what they look like now. So just really humbling spaces, very moving spaces, but spaces that we need to see and understand and appreciate, because veterans are amongst us, and you know, it's not all the same similar stereotype story we kind of grew up hearing about.
We have less than 2 minutes, but pivot across the street to COSI. I'm looking forward to seeing Pixar's exhibit. That's what COSI has right now, right?
Absolutely. We got Pixar and we got Seasons of Celebration. Seasons of Celebration recognizes the different holiday spirits throughout this period to like the end of January. And we have all these amazing trees that were decorated by individuals or corporate sponsors. So come check it out. That's free with admission. But then we got the science behind Pixar. This is one of my favorite exhibits, Amy. I mean, I'm not saying this because I work at COSI. It's just such a cool exhibit. Everybody's got a favorite Pixar, if not movie character. It's for people of all ages. Come check that out. That's there through the end of May easily. But also very exciting is this is the first time we're doing this. Now through the end of January, we are having a 2-for-1 membership drive. If you buy a membership at COSI, a yearly membership, we will give you that second membership for my favorite four letters after COSI and MVMM for free.
Like you could give a membership to, as a gift to someone else?
You can buy your membership for your family for 1 year, and you get a second year for yourself.
So you can get a second family membership?
For your membership.
Wow.
Or you can buy a gift membership to somebody else. They'll get a second year as well. Absolutely. And every membership level. So whether it's our starter membership level or our premium, it's there. So now you have to buy it between now and end of January, and then it's gone. Only time we've done it. It's really exciting. We know money is tight for people, so we just want to show how we're sensitive to what's happening for certain families.
There's getting your foot traffic up, right?
There's getting our foot traffic up. Absolutely.
So in the last minute we have left, give a little plug for people to come down and visit NVMM.
Yeah, so listen, we're privileged to be in the great state of Ohio and be in this city to have something that literally has a national designation. We have the Ohio State Buckeyes, our national champions in football.
Of course.
We have great, right? Other great things at Ohio State, of course. But now we have this National Veterans Memorial Museum, and to understand the stories of veterans is a critical thing. They give us and provide us the freedoms we have here. And so understanding that their life continues on after service is critical. So come check that out. And because of the proximity, just come downtown. You can see NVMM in the morning, come to COSI in the afternoon, or vice versa. But definitely, it's an important institution. We look forward to your feedback when you do come through. If you have any inspiring or ideas to share with us, just give us comments back. But the National Veterans Memorial Museum, Amy, is right here in Columbus, Ohio.
Our guest this hour has been Dr. Frederick Burtley, Dr. B, CEO of COSI and CEO of the National Veterans Memorial Museum. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on and the whole team.
You have been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.